I'm Eric Allen for KLCC. Author and actress Elena Passarello is an Oregon Book Award finalist for her inventive book of essays, Let Me Clear My Throat, which creatively explores the use of the human voice from popular culture screams to singing and professional voice work. She was also the first woman to win the annual Stanley and Stella Shouting Contest in New Orleans, honoring Marlon Brando's classic line in A Streetcar Named Desire. She's now teaching at Oregon State University's School of Writing, Literature, and Film in Corvallis. She joins us in the KLCC studios. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. It's so great to be here.
Well, what originally inspired you to take on the human voice as it manifests in these places beyond words?
Well, I worked for about 10 years as a stage actress and a voiceover performer, and then I went to grad school to get an MFA in nonfiction, thinking that I was going to write about something very different, that I was making this huge life change. And I realized about a year and a half in that no matter what essay I wrote, no matter what assignment I did, I always used the voice as this entry point. At one point, I was writing about a bird, the cuckoo. I was writing a sort of a science writing essay, and I started writing about the voice of the cuckoo. And I realized that that was a window into the way that I understood almost everything. And I think it came from my work as a performer, and I think it also came from just the fact that my voice is really one of the only distinguishable qualities about me. I have brown hair, brown eyes, 5'6". I look like everybody else, but I'm a baritone, a female baritone, and I used to have a southern accent. So I think those three reasons, the accent, the baritone, and the theater work, all led me to make a book about the voice.
And featured prominently in this book, screams are featured prominently. They seem to have unique resonance. They're so primal, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by them because we knew how to scream before we knew how to speak. Around the time of Lucy the hominid, our hyoid bone dropped into the back of our throat and we began to be able to manipulate sounds in the way that could eventually become speech. But for many, many years before that, thousands, millions of years before that, we could scream. So now, on these rare occasions in contemporary life when we hear or use screams, that awakens a part of us that is much older than speech. So I'm kind of obsessed with screams.
And in the case of, say, The Who or Led Zeppelin, these screams are revered. But in the case of Howard Dean, they've sabotaged a career. What makes a scream received well or badly?
I think that's one of the reasons that we love rock and roll so much is that we've created a framework where screams are cool and are allowed and where, regular human beings, I don't know if you would call Roger Daltrey a regular human being, but somewhat regular human beings can make these sounds and we can enjoy them and we can sit still and watch and then we can go back to our regular life and not use screams so much. So it's unusual when somebody outside of that framework makes a scream. And it's good that it's unusual because if we hear somebody screaming on the street, we know to come running. But if we hear somebody screaming in a rock show or a football game, we know it's okay. So Howard Dean makes this scream in a non-okay arena and everyone freaks out, right? And the thing that really interests me about the Howard Dean scream, which, by the way, we are nearing the 10th anniversary of, January 19th will be the 10th anniversary of this legendary political scream. When he made this scream that many people say tanked his political hopes, in that very same arena, there were rock screams happening left and right. It's very unusual to enter a presidential rally or town hall meeting or forum and not hear a rock scream from Bruce Springsteen, from Roger Daltrey, from Robert Plant, from James Brown. So I'd find the Dean scream so fascinating because we see both frameworks present in the exact same place. We have a guy who shouldn't be screaming, and then we have all these other people who we need to scream in order to make us feel this great feeling, right?
And Howard Dean was making sense up until that very moment.
I have to be fair. A lot of people who supported Dean 10 years ago will remind us that it is not necessarily the scream that tanked his career, and maybe tanked is an inappropriate verb. But the sound itself is just spectacular. He actually wasn't doing too great by the time the caucus. It was kind of a concession speech because he came in an unexpected third behind John Kerry and John Edwards. But I just think that scream is a spectacular moment. It's so beautiful, and the wind-up is this great pro wrestler thing, and the microphone is just perfect to capture the sound. It didn't sound anything like it sounded in the room, and it's just, I love it. I love everything about that scream. I completely understand why it was played so many times in the week following the 2004 Iowa caucus that all three national media outlets issued an apology to the Dean campaign. It was the first viral sound. Maybe the other one would be like, where's the beef, or I've fallen and I can't get up from the 80s. But this was the first real viral clip that people were, you know, making buttons out of and sending to each other in really primitive MP3 files. So it's a piece of history that I'm excited to commemorate on January 19th, 2014.
And it's up there perhaps then in the long term, we'll see, with the Wilhelm scream in the movies.
Yes.
People may not know what that is, but they've heard it.
Yeah, the Wilhelm scream is a sound clip that was originally recorded in about 1951, the same year as Brando's Stella. And it was made for an old Gary Cooper movie called, no, just an old movie called Distant Drums, where a guy gets eaten by an alligator. And then a few months later, it was used in a Gary Cooper movie called Charge at Feather River, where this character named Wilhelm gets an arrow in his leg and dies. And something about it, it's just this ridiculous sound, really captured the imaginations of these Hollywood sound engineers. And since then, it has appeared in, I think at this point, it's over 350 films. It's in A Star is Born with Judy Garland. It's in all the Quentin Tarantino movies. It happens to a stormtrooper in the first Star Wars. It's in Toy Story. I think all three Toy Stories. It's very often on Community, that TV show Community. And the best thing about it is that nobody knows who made this sound. Nobody knows who made it. There's a theory that it's Sheb Woolley, the guy most responsible for writing and singing One-Eyed, One-Horned, Flying Purple People Eater. Nobody knows. So this mysterious voice making this ridiculous sound has been woven throughout the past 60 years of film, American film culture. How cool is that? And you can get it as an app on your phone now.
Just you can get anything as an app on your phone.
That's true. Probably the Dean scream too.
Probably. And probably Brando with Stella.
And there's a theory that somebody uses the Dean scream, which sounds a lot like the Wilhelm scream, in an episode in the second season of Breaking Bad, or when he goes to blow up the building and he throws the powder. And, you know, I don't have enough sonic technology in my home to tell, but it sure does sound like a Dean scream during, when this explosion happens.
I want to get back to Brando for a moment here. When you were in the Stanley and Stella shouting contest in New Orleans, what were you trying to capture of Brando's version of Stella that made your own performance powerful enough to win?
Well, I have to go on record as saying that I think that Marlon Brando's Stella scream is the greatest vocal moment in the history of the American 20th century. I mean, I could put anybody up against it, in any venue, film, politics. I think it's the most wonderful thing because it shows this new moment in American acting and theater. It's really mimetic. Somebody who's never heard of Streetcar Named Desire will embrace the Stella, like babies like to yell Stella. And it's just beautiful. And when you watch a clip of it, it's a beautiful moment. So I went down there. I heard that a woman had never won. So I went down there thinking that I would lose, sort of like a George Plimpton kind of a thing. And then I just got really competitive, and I had more than my fair share of bourbon because it was in New Orleans. And I just kind of lost it. And I don't know. I think that the judging there, I ended up judging it a couple of years later. And so I have it on good authority that their process of evaluation is not all that regulated. But it felt really good to do. If you've never been able to let out a Stella, I say if you're in your car right now, do it in your car. Just to open up your whole body and make that sound is a pretty good feeling. Not great to listen to, but a good feeling.
What do you think space aliens are going to make of the scream and Johnny Be Good if they ever find the version that's on the spacecraft we sent out there?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there's no scream there, but there is. It's the only English language voice that we hear, or the only English words that we hear. There's two more American recordings that go out, three. But one is of Navajo chanting, one is a Louis Armstrong instrumental, and one is a blues song where the guy kind of moans. So Chuck Berry is all we have for American singing for the aliens to hear. Should the Voyager space probe make it out there, although apparently its batteries are going to die in about 2 years, and they can detach this golden record from the Voyager space probe and figure out how to play it, they'll have Chuck Berry. And I love his voice in that because it's like an arrow pointing forward, you know? Like, It's this beautiful high tenor. It's eager. It's kind of cocksure, which I think is great. So if I was an alien, I would be really excited about that. Why not? You know?
Let's talk about throat clearing as a means of expression. And why is that the title for your book?
Oh, well, Let Me Clear My Throat, the title has gotten me into a little bit of trouble among vocal professionals, because most singers and actors will tell you one of the worst things you can do for your voice is clear your throat. It kind of bruises the vocal cords. And if you ever are a little phlegmy, you're supposed to just swallow. So, but that's not why I chose the title. There's actually a song by DJ Kool that came out in 1996, the year I graduated high school, called Let Me Clear My Throat. And I don't know if you guys can play it, but it's a terrific, crazy party anthem song. So it's just kind of a nod to my fellow Gen Xer pals.
Well, your book deals in much more than screams and throat clearing. It goes into singing and professional voice work and so on. How did you define the boundaries of what you included in that book? It comes at it from so many angles.
I knew that I wanted to divide the book into three sections. The first one's on screams. So that's where you get your Brando, your Howard Dean, your Rebel Yell, your Wilhelm scream. And then I wanted to talk about singing. So that was the second section. And then I wanted a third section on mysteries or fake voices or kind of outlying voices. And then, so I set those parameters for myself: screams, singing, and then weirdo voices. And then in order to choose essays for each category, I had a little bit of a time, because I found that the voices that I was the most excited about, Brando aside, I had a really difficult time writing about, because then all you do when you write about your favorite singer again and again is say, isn't this cool? Isn't this cool? You know what I mean? Like, so when I tried to write about a little Jimmy Scott, for example, who's one of my favorite voices, there was nothing I could do but celebrate him. So I found it was more helpful for me as an essayist to find a voice that the people loved, or that created this gigantic response, and then unpack what the response meant. So obviously Frank Sinatra is this American voice that I think I was so saturated by the time I became a grown-up, I didn't really take him seriously. And I tried to dig back into why Sinatra is such a big part of American culture. I found this little book that cost 75 cents that was published in 1941, called How to Sing Like Frank Sinatra, or something like that. And so I dove back into that book and tried to figure out if Frank, it was supposedly written by Frank Sinatra, which we all know is completely not true. I tried to figure out if the lessons in that book extended to the legacy of this man's voice. And I did that sort of various versions of that for all of the other voices, singers like Judy Garland or the castrati of Italian opera, punk rock singers that I've been sort of interested in how I had to train my ears to like punk rock. I grew up on folk music, you know, and then I wanted to be cool and listen to punk. And then things like ventriloquists or Siri, automated voices, things like that.
And here you are as a writer, and writing is silent. What's the challenge of making a book about sound when there's no sound involved?
Well, I think that's my challenge. I talk to my students about this sometimes. You shouldn't take on all of the challenges in the world, but in writing, you should always pick one thing that pushes you outside of the general parameters of what writing can do. And for me, the dancing about architecture problem is reaching over that hurdle is my favorite kind of conflict in writing. That for me was the engine rather than the hurdle of the book. I don't know if I succeed the whole time, but I think one of the things that a reader can do with the book is watch the different ways in which I try to work around the fact that you can't produce sound on a page.
Is there anything in the end that you'd like readers to come away with knowing or feeling about the human voice?
Well, I certainly encourage people to get in touch with me on Twitter, or I'm Elena Vox on Twitter, or at my website, to continue the conversation. What I would love to do, and what I really wanted the book to do, was just to throw out into the world these celebrations of these voices that I think inspire thought and response and conversation. So I just like the idea that it would make people think more about their voices and then one-up me by coming up with their own responses to how the voice has meant something to them as, you know, members of the 21st century.
And you may collect some screams in the process.
Yeah, I do. Sometimes I'll get random emails where somebody will just send me a scream. Like, you didn't talk about Lux Interior, and then they'll just be this MP3 of this like primal screaming in my Gmail on like a Monday morning, which is a real blessing, I have to tell you.
Better than coffee for waking you up.
Yeah.
Author and actress Elena Passarello, Oregon Book Award finalist for Let Me Clear My Throat, her debut book of essays regarding the human voice, and she's the winner of the 2011 Stanley and Stella Shouting Contest in New Orleans. She teaches in Oregon State University's School of Writing, Literature, and Film. For more information, ElenaPassarello.com. Thank you for coming in.
Oh, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
For KLCC, I'm Eric Allen.